The Fields of Home by Ralph Moody, University of Nebraska Press, 1953, Chapter 21, Grandfather's War and Mine. You are our mighty God, our sovereign Lord, the King of all the earth, the Creator, the one who sustains all things by the power of your word. We worship you as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, the triune God. Holy, holy, holy. And as we bow before you, we acknowledge that you are always right in all that you do. And we delight to be found acknowledging your work in Jesus' name. Amen. After I got back to Medford, I bought a Boston Globe and read all the male help wanted ads. Had to try a dozen different places before I found a job, and the one I got was an easy one. That was the trouble with it. It was too easy. All I had to do was run an elevator up and down in an apartment hotel at Mount Vernon and Joy Streets. If the job had been in a busy office building, a department store, or a warehouse, I wouldn't have minded it. But Gray Chambers was too dignified and too quiet. I had to wear a tight green uniform, be careful never to close the door hard enough to make any noise, and to speak almost in a whisper. When there was nobody to take up or bring down, I had to stand beside the elevator doorway and not cross my feet or lean against the wall. Most of the people who lived at Gray Chambers were bachelors or old maids, and they were all past 50. I went to work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and stayed till midnight, but the only time I had anything to do was when they were going out to supper or coming back afterwards. The rest of the time, I just stood and looked in the mirror at the floor or at the floor or the ceiling and thought about different things at the farm and how Annie Littlehale looked. After a week of it, I wished I was back picking up useless rocks or spreading manure. And I wouldn't have cared how much Grandfather yelled, "Tarnal fool boy," at me. On my first Sunday night, I didn't have a single passenger after 8 o'clock. Long before midnight, I was having a terrible time to keep awake and stand up straight. When I had only 15 minutes more to wait, and was looking at my uniform in the mirror and telling myself I was really a tarnal fool boy, I heard the lobby door click. I just pulled my jacket down so my shirt wouldn't show around the middle, squared my shoulders, and was looking straight ahead when a familiar voice called out, "It's a wonder they ain't give you a bass drum. Where's the rest of the band?" I forgot all about Gray Chambers and whispering and shouted, "Hi, Uncle Levi, how did you get here?" "Come in a hansom cab. Man's got to put on style when he goes to visiting his folks on Beacon Hill. Kind of like getting up in the world, ain't you?" I'd never noticed that Uncle Levi's voice was loud till the "ain't you" came echoing down from the dome of the hot lobby. I think he knows it too, because he dropped the tone right down and said, "Cabby's waiting outside. Ain't it about time you was knocking off for the day?" As he spoke, he was slipping his watch out of his little leather pouch. He looked at it and added, "Ain't nothing but this. But the shank of the day left no ways. Just come from seeing Mary. She says you can sleep the night with me if you've a mind to." I had never ridden in a hansom cab before, but the driver seemed to know Uncle Levi pretty well. "Fetch us to Hayes' place on Causeway Street," Uncle Levi told him. Then he slapped me on the leg and said, "Been to see Thomas. It's a wonder that he hasn't starved before I got there. Don't calculate he's had a bite sept in oatmeal since he run you and Millie off. Pot of the cussed stuff setting on the back stove when I come. Burnt on the bottom, dry on top, and sour in the middle. It's a wonder he ain't poisoned himself. The kind of victuals he'll eat when there ain't nobody to watch after him. Calculates that's what a man eats. What a man eats is wasted. Never seen him short a critter, but he'll pinch his own belly till there ain't enough of him left for the wind to get a hold of." "His own belly or anybody else's," I said. Uncle Levi didn't seem to hear me and went on, "Wouldn't doubt none if it come from the hard row he had to hoe the time he lost your grandma. Like to broke his heart putting a debt again the old place and all. Don't calculate he et a decent meal twixt then and the day he paid the mortgage off. Took him 30 years. Couldn't think of another cussed thing the whole time. Scratch and dig and starve till he was wore down. Then lay abed with chills and fever and rant because the work wasn't done." "He rants whenever the work is done or not," I broke in. But Uncle Levi didn't pay any attention. He just sat, hunched forward a little and looking in his hands and cupped over his knees. "Run, Ralph and Frankie off the before they was older than what you be. Lacked having patience with them. Lacked having the understanding that they wasn't as het up over the mortgage as what he was. The cab had stopped in front of a restaurant with a big bright windows. The driver had climbed down and stood by the cab step, but Uncle Levi didn't look up. Trouble with Thomas, he can't see out nobody else's window but his own. Can't see no farther than the walls round about the land father left him. Can't see no way of doing things except in the way father done him. A shame, father spoiled him before he ever learnt to stand alone. How was it he didn't spoil you, I asked. Uncle Levi heard me, but he didn't look up. I come too late, he said. Thomas come when father was 73. Father never calculated on getting a son at that age. Loved him more than the Almighty loves the world. Spoiled him rotten before ever he could walk. I come when father was nigh onto 80. Heard tell he clumb the house chimney and sought a red flag. A bragging to the neighbors he'd fetched another boy. Never knowed father well. Time I was calculating old enough to... Time I was old enough to remember he was getting on the years. Calculate I was more a nuisance to him than a joy. He lifted his big knuckled hands from his knees, rubbed one inside the other, and said slowly, curious, ain't it? Me the spitting image of father, and Thomas not favoring him. There's times I wonder if that ain't hurt Thomas. Uncle Levi raised his head heavily, and then turned it quickly toward the driver. Great day. How long you been sitting here? He asked. Come on, Ralph. These Hayes folks wax up a pretty good squash pie. The restaurant had a long glass case behind the counter with all kinds of cakes and pies, fruits, puddings, cookies, and coffee cakes on it. I wasn't very hungry, but Uncle Levi kept going along the counter asking me if I didn't want some of this or some of that. It didn't make much difference whether I said I did or I didn't. He told the waiter to bring it to us anyway. When we went to the table, we had as many different desserts as they have at a church supper. I'd just taken a couple of swallows of milk when Uncle Levi said, "Ain't like blowing back the foam and drinking it warm off the lip of the pail, is it? Never did get so as I could count warm milk worth a cow hair or two. Never did get so as I didn't count warm milk worth a cow's hair or two. I don't know what that means, but anyway, he liked it. Old Bess likes warm milk, I told him. I never milked but what she'd come and wanted for me to squirt it in her mouth. Before I come away, she got so she'd never miss a drop. Curious, ain't it? The way old Bess cleaves to Thomas. Same way as Thomas clove to father. Poor old Bess. Dread the day of her passing. Thomas leans heavy on her for love. Children all the way and wed. But all he's got left is old Bess and Millie. I looked up so quickly that I spilled the milk from my glass. I didn't know she was back, I said. I didn't think she'd ever come back. Uncle Levi sat, rubbing one hand inside the other, and he said, always has. Probably will this time. Curious, ain't it? The feeling that's grown up twixt Thomas and Millie. Thomas is awful fond of Millie. Then why did he say he never wanted to see her again? I asked, and why did he kick her screen door all to pieces? Uncle Levi didn't answer till he'd rubbed one hand over the other a dozen times. He watched them as the fingers dragged across the high knuckle bones and then said slowly, Thomas is in the midst of the biggest war ever a man fit, and you put him into it, Ralph. He comes as nigh to loving you as airy man that walks the earth. Something in the way Uncle Levi said it made my throat hurt. I blurted out, he doesn't either. He hates me. He calls me useless and worthless, and he's always yelling and calling me a tarnal fool boy. If he cared as much about me as he does for the yellow colt, he wouldn't give me senseless jobs and tell me it's to keep me out of mischief. What is he trying to make me lug rocks off that high field by hand for if he likes me so much? He tells me to put more manure on the field than he thinks I can haul in a week. Then when I do it, he gets mad and says I've wasted it. It wouldn't be wasted if he'd put a decent crop on that field. I've tried a dozen times to tell him it would be good for strawberries and tomatoes. They'd make him 40 times what that dressing is worth, but every time I mention it, he nearly bites my head off. Millie and I put up most of the hay crop all alone, and all he does is yammer because I ripped a little piece off the ridgepole of the barn. I made a rake for the having a side war all your own, ain't you, Ralph? Uncle Levi asked me quietly. I don't know what you mean by this war business, I told him. If there's a war, it's a one-sided one. Grandfather's doing all the fighting. I haven't raised my voice to him once since I went back there. Mm-hmm. Ain't using no machines he didn't tell you to? Well, the stone rake isn't really a machine. It's more like a harrow with the teeth set so they'll bring the rocks to the top. Mm-hmm. Thomas, he's mighty proud about it. Took me out to the field to see it. Then why did he call it a contraption and tell me to pick up the rocks by hand? And why did he tell me to haul more dressing than he thought I could and get mad because I did it? 'Tain't 'cause you done it, it's how you done it. For more than 50 years, Thomas has farmed the old place the way Father learned him to do it. He runs his own boys off because he made them do things the way Father done them, instead of keeping up with the times. He dug his heart out of them stony hills till the years and the malaria dried most of the sap out of him. It's a wonder it didn't kill him. 'Twould have killed any other man I know, but Thomas, he wouldn't jot nor tittle. Like to broke his heart to start by using that cussed old mowing machine. Come the time he couldn't hand hoe the crops, he turned the whole place into hay and sought back to write out what further years the Almighty give him. I looked up. Uncle Levi's eyes were blurry, but he smiled and laid one hand over on mine. Then you come along and the war commenced. He's seen you as a farmer. He's seen the mark of the land on you, Ralph, and that you knowed the worth of a field. Why do you calculate he fit you on the high field? Why do you make him so cussed mad when you say strawberries and tomatoes? 'Tain't because he thinks you're wrong. It's because he knows you're right. It's because he knows it can't be done without hired help or without the things he calls contraptions. He's fit agin him so long, it's come to be his nature to hate him. For 2 or 3 minutes, Uncle Levi was quiet. Slowly, his fingers stopped rubbing across his knuckles. He held his hands, he held his loosely closed fists side by side with the knuckles up. Then the two forefingers lifted above them till they stood together like the spires of a church. Curious, he said. Never come to think of it that way afore, but Father and the Almighty stand shoulder to shoulder in Thomas's belief, and the land they give him is holy ground. I calculate when he sees strangers and contraptions working that ground, his feeling is a sight like them the Lord had when he's seen the money changers in the temple. Uncle Levi looked up from his fingers, and the ends of his mustache lifted with his smile. Leastways, Thomas piles into him in about the same fashion as the Lord done. Ever since I'd had the elevator job, I'd known I wanted to go back to Grandfather's. The want had been growing stronger and stronger as Uncle Levi talked. When he said Grandfather knew I was right about the strawberries, I'd wanted to break right in and tell him I was going back and that Grandfather could yell at me all he wanted to. Then, when he talked about the money changers, I felt as if I had gone all empty inside. I swallowed hard and said, "Then I'm not going back. It's better to let the whole place stay in hay. I don't want to be any money changer. I don't want to be a stranger on that place, and I don't want to be the cause of Grandfather's having a war with himself." I tried to keep my voice steady, but it was quivering a little at the end. Uncle Levi reached over and took hold of my wrist hard. He looked right into my eyes and said, "God love you, boy. You ain't a stranger to Thomas. You're his own blood and his father's blood. He's lacking in the grace to show it to you, but he loves you and he's proud of you, Ralph. If he wasn't, there wouldn't be no war. One day he looks at your young hands and sees them as his own when he was a young, a-turning the soil, a-making it bloom, and a-fetching them wore-out rocky hills again into mellow plowing fields. He sees the run-out hidden field a-bloom with clover and the wilderness field took up again. Then up pops the devil. Thomas, he ain't nobody's fool. He knows there's no hope to hold you less than you have the tools you'll need to do the job. Though nobody has to tell him, the job's too big for a young boy and an old man to do with their bare hands." Uncle Levi reached inside into his inside coat pocket and took out a bundle of letters tied with a white thread. "Curious, ain't it, the way this thing's a-working on Thomas?" he said. "Writ me more letters this last month than in all the days of his life put together. It wasn't for the handwriting. You'd swear to God they was two separate men. One of them's full of what he's about to do, clearing the field, wilderness anew, building a piece under the barn, 20 head of milk cows, and asking me this and that, even asking me what I know about strawberries. Didn't know that he'd wrote the government and half the seed companies about strawberries, did you? Never guessed why he was clearing that high field of stone. The next, he's a-ranting and raving at me for trying to tell him how to farm. Poor Thomas, it's an awful war he's got himself into. 'Tain't easy for a man of 72 to cast the idols out of his temple. Don't calculate he's been too busy, too easy to live with. I thought he knew all the fields on the place, I said, but I didn't know. I thought I knew all the fields on the place, I said, but I don't know the wilderness field. Which one is it? West end of the pasture now, twixt the orchard wall and the hidden field, Uncle Levi told me. Might happen that could be the field where Thomas could win his war. Father and my half-brothers, Naya and Stephen and Jacob, cleared all the fields, except in only that one. That's how come Thomas left that field to be the one to slip back to wilderness. Couldn't find it in him to let a field go that Father'd cleared. How could he win his war on the field, I asked. I thought you said his war was all inside of him. Tis. If 'twasn't, there wouldn't be no war. Thomas, he's like every other man in lots of ways. Wants to leave his mark on the face of the earth when he's gone. Father left the wilderness field for Thomas to clear. We'd done it once, him and I. Took us nigh onto 3 years. Thomas ain't sure there's 3 years left to him. I still don't know what field you mean, I said. It couldn't be the far west end of the pasture. That land is still covered as thick as a spatter with rocks the size of a rain barrel. Uncle Levi looked up at me across the top of his glasses. Don't you know where the rocks come from? He asked. Well, I told him. I read in my geography book that they were left by the glaciers when they melted. By hub? Must have been one of them cussed glaciers melt atop the whole state of Maine. Could be that's where they come from, but it ain't what makes them such a pesky nuisance. Frost. Frost heaves them up every winter. Pick a field clean as a whistle in the fall, and come spring, it'll be peppered thick again, excepting for a few great boulders. There wasn't a stone the size of your fist left on that field 40 years ago. Mostly, Maine land's a struggle twixt man and the wilderness. Clear it and turn your back on it, and in a few years, the wilderness will crowd in and claim it again. Uncle Levi sat looking at his hands for a minute or two, then said, By hub, I'm glad this meeting twixt you and me come about. Curious, ain't it? You recollect when I first come down to the old farm in Hang, Thomas and you and me are sitting in the kitchen after supper. The night I was soaking my blisters and we all went to sleep? Thomas is sitting with his feet in the oven. Yes, I remember it. Recollect what he said to you? I had to stop and think for a minute. Well, I remember that he said the bull bellowed something awful when the barn burned. What else did he say to you? Didn't catch it all myself. Must have been dozing. Why, if I remember right, he said something about the new barn being 20-some feet shorter than the old one, and that we were going to build the piece back on. That's the ticket. Now we're getting someplace. Maybe so, I said, but I don't see how that has anything to do with grandfather's battle. You don't, do you? I didn't know it till 2 minutes ago. I ought to have had sense enough to see through this afore whenever Frankie went off to learn a trade. I guess I'm dumb, I told him. I don't have any idea what you're talking about. Why do you calculate Thomas has been so cussed ugly? He asked me, why do you calculate he's come to be a man that can't get along with himself or nobody else? Why do you suppose he don't want nobody to come to the old place? What makes him so tarnation stingy the devil himself wouldn't want him? Great day of judgment. Maybe it's the malaria, I said. Some, but that ain't the half of it. How would you feel if your father left you a job of work to do, like putting the wilderness field under the plow, and the day was fast coming when you'd be going to meet your father, and you'd have to look him in the eye and tell him the job wasn't done? How'd you feel if you made your mark on the earth, built the biggest barn in all the country roundabouts, and fire had burnt it down, and you knowed you couldn't build it back alone? And through your own cantankerousness, you'd run off them that could help you do it. Well, I don't think I'd feel very good about it. Thomas neither. I calculate it's been a gnawing at him like a canker all these 20 years gone, poisoning his innards till the heaves it off in spite and meanness. Thomas, he's like a little kettle with no spout and too tight a lid. Never learned to talk with other folks and leave off his steam wisp by wisp. Hold it back till the lid blows off and the nearest one gets scalded. Scrooge and scrimp, squeeze and hoard up a few pennies so he'll have something to pass on to his children, except in a wore-out old farm in the place of the fertile one father left him. Yes, I know, I said. I've been scalded, but what can I do to help? I ain't certain. Ain't certain of a blessed thing, but there's a pill I'd for certain like to try on. Supposing we was to get him all het up on you, and him a clearing the wilderness field again and building back onto that barn. Ain't nobody, nothing in the Almighty's world he'd sooner have to look back on come his time to go. That is, if I be calculating it right here. There's lots of foolish things Thomas done, but he ain't foolish. He'll know there ain't a living ghost of a chance of you doing it the way we done it before. He'll know. Give him time to study it out himself. You got to have the tools to do the job. Appears to me a man will generally always, given his chance, take the things he wants most. If we can make Thomas want the clearing of the wilderness field and the building of the barn more than he hates contraptions, it might happily be we could help to swing the tide of the war. Great day. We better get out of here afore they mop us up for leftovers. Here it is nigh onto 2 o'clock in the morning, and it don't seem like we've been here in no time at all. It's a wonder you ain't fell asleep long ago. Ain't you going to finish your victuals? The next morning, I found a boy to take my elevator job, and that evening, the whole family came in to the wharf with me when I took the boat for Bath. Uncle Levi was there with as many bundles as he could carry, and he bought me a ticket for a stateroom up on the deck of the ship. After the man had called, "All ashore that's going ashore," and Mother and the other children had started for the gangplank, Uncle Levi popped his head back into my room and whispered, "Don't say nothing to Thomas about the pill business till I get down there. 'Twon't be no longer than I can help. Might try getting him to wisp off steam a trifle as he goes, instead of building it up to a big head. Keep your nose clean." I'd planned to go out on the deck and watch the lights of Boston fade away as the ship sailed out of the harbor, but I didn't do it. As soon as everyone was gone, I realized I was awfully tired and thought I'd lie down for just a few minutes while we pulled away from the pier. The next thing I knew, the ship was quiet. There was only the gentle pulsing of the engine, and pale gray light showed at the window. I still had all my clothes on, so I slid off the bunk and went out on the deck. It was gray dawn, and not a breath of air was stirring. The water lay like a great table top with blue-gray silk scarf spread all over it. A light mist rose from the water, and through it I could see dozens of islands like big handfuls of dark green leaves dropped here and there on the scarf. The only living thing seemed to be the wide wake, like a great white-flecked sea serpent following us through the water. There was only one man on the deck, and from his blue uniform and white cap, I knew he must be an officer of the ship. He was leaning on his elbows at the side rail and looking off toward the islands. I wanted to be all alone, so I walked up the passageway on the other side of the ship, past the rows of cabins and almost to the very peak of the bow. Then I leaned on the rail, too. From there I could feel, more than hear, the engines. It was almost as though the ship were alive, but sleeping, and its heart was beating slow and steady in its breast. The only real sound was the whisper of water as the prow slid forward. For me, it was like that moment just before church service, when you're waiting for the organ to sing out, "Praise God from whom." So slowly I didn't know what was happening. The daylight grew stronger, and the mist drew back into the water. The islands became clearer. I could see shoulders of rock at their water lines and dark green pines covering their domes. Off to the left, the hills of the mainland seemed to be gliding toward us across the surface of the water. They rolled down in great curving folds to the shore, and as they came nearer, birches stood clear and white against the black-green background of the pines. I always thought that nothing could be as beautiful as the Rocky Mountains, west of Denver, when the first rays of sunlight caught their peaks. For me, there had always been excitement and glory in their strength and roughness. They always made me want to shout and clench my fist and sing. Here on the ship, leaning against the rail, with the wooded hills and islands gliding toward me across the still water, the feeling was entirely different. I wanted to be quiet and alone. It must have come gradually, like the daylight, because I only came to realize slowly that the Lord's Prayer was going over and over in my mind. Off to the right, about half a mile away, the islands grew larger and higher. Then the sun touched the top of pines along the ridge. I knew it must be mainland, and that we were moving into the mouth of the great river. When I looked back from watching the sunlight grow along the ridge, the blue-uniformed officer was leaning on the rail beside me. He was an old man. His face was lean and leathery, with deep lines, and it was as calm as I felt inside. He must have known the way I was feeling, because his voice was just above a whisper when he said, "Kennebec. Pretty, ain't it?" I couldn't have spoken out loud right then, and whispered back, "Yes, beautiful." He didn't say anything more till we'd stood there 5 or 6 minutes, and there was only the pulse of the engines as we came into the river itself. Then he laid his hand on my shoulder for a moment and said, "Maine blood, isn't you? Ain't there, lad? Man can always tell it." I just nodded, and he walked away as quietly as he had come. There's a lot in that chapter. I really like the way Ralph explained how Uncle Levi came to his understanding of what was going on with Grandfather and why he's so hard on everybody. It's pretty powerful. And an opportunity for Ralph to go back up and impact his grandfather, but also to do the work that God made him to do. I love you guys. Have a great day.